Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled,
so, have you ever felt like you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And now I say this on every single show, and I'm really sorry if you're tired of hearing it, but just to be different and to give you a little comical variety, I'm going to say it this time in a New York accent, just as if you were flying out of JFK Airport, because it's so important. Okay? Here goes. When you don't put on your own oxygen mask first, just like the airlines tell us, in the event of a loss of cabin pressure and the oxygen mask falls down from the ceiling, please, please put your mask on first before you attempt to put the mask of your child on. Okay, that's a terrible New York accent, I know, and I'm from Brooklyn, so I'm ashamed. But the reason for that silly little rule, folks, is that the airlines know that you will most likely black out if you don't. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. Well, you see, caregivers are the same way. You've got to take care of you first. And then you can take care of your care receiver. Because if you don't, you're all in trouble. So we also talk about loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Kind of scary. And we will also be talking about the grief process. The only way out of the grief process, folks, is to go through it. And hopefully we will help you do that if you feel like you're kind of stuck. And that's normal. You know, everybody gets stuck once in a while. Well, I'm so excited today because we have a very special guest, Andrew Angelo. I hope I pronounced that right. I was supposed to ask him how to pronounce that first. But
it's okay. I'll forgive you. It's Angulo.
Angulo. I knew I did. I had the syllable on the accent on the wrong syllable or something like that. Founder of his very own company, Disabled Life Media, which is located at disabledlifemedia.com. And he is a paraplegic from a motorcycle accident about 5 years ago. We will also attempt to take some callers halfway through our break or through our breaks. We take break every 15 minutes. The call-in number is 213-943-3630, 213-943-3630, and just push the number 1 on your keypad. That tells me that you want to talk. For those of you who do not press number 1 on your keypad, that tells me that you are just calling in to the show to listen, because maybe there's no internet where you are. Maybe you don't have a computer. You don't have a smartphone. Or driving down the highway having a good time. So, if this is your very first time tuning in, you can go to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave and the first four letters of my last name, N-A-S-S, N like Nancy, .com. And you can actually learn about me and my lovely wife, Charlene. She's just wonderful. But that's another story. And our story, we have videos there. And also, you can learn what makes me qualified to have the audacity to call myself the caregiver's caregiver. You can also buy our books, view our videos, help yourself to a bunch of caregiver resources, all from our website. And I'm writing a new book, my third, entitled The Caregiver's Caregiver, A Guide to Avoiding Burnout and Surviving Grief. And you see, unlike my last two books, which were self-published, this one will be actually pitched to a major publisher through a literary agent who I was introduced to, who showed some interest in it. Now, unfortunately, that process takes a little longer, I should say. That process takes a lot longer than self-publishing. like 1 or 2 years instead of 30 or 60 days. So please be patient. That's really one reason why I started this radio program, so that you can get your weekly dose of tips and support and tools to put in your tool belt and help you survive caregiver burnout and grief. All right, that's enough of that. Welcome, Andrew.
Well, thank you, Dave. I really appreciate the invitation on the show, and hello to everybody out there.
My pleasure. Let me just clarify something, because you are a paraplegic. Yes. You're not a caregiver, right? Obviously.
I am not a caregiver, no.
When you're down.
Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And now I say this on every single show, and I'm really sorry if you're tired of hearing it, but just to be different and to give you a little comical variety, I'm going to say it this time in a New York accent, just as if you were flying out of JFK Airport, because it's so important. Okay? Here goes. When you don't put on your own oxygen mask first, just like the airlines tell us, in the event of a loss of cabin pressure and the oxygen mask falls down from the ceiling, please, please put your mask on first before you attempt to put the mask of your child on. Okay, that's a terrible New York accent, I know, and I'm from Brooklyn, so I'm ashamed. But the reason for that silly little rule, folks, is that the airlines know that you will most likely black out if you don't, and then you won't be of any help to anybody. Well, you see, caregivers are the same way. You've got to take care of you first, and then you can take care of your care receiver, because if you don't, you're all in trouble. So we also talk about loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process, kind of scary. And we will also be talking about the grief process. The only way out of the grief process, folks, is to go through it. And hopefully we will help you do that if you feel like you're kind of stuck. And that's normal. You know, everybody gets stuck once in a while. Well, I'm so excited today because we have a very special guest, Andrew Angelo. I hope I pronounced that right. I was supposed to ask him how to pronounce that first, but
I forgot. It's okay. I'll forgive you. It's Angulo.
Angulo. I knew I did. I had the syllable on the wrong, the accent on the wrong syllable or something like that. Founder of his very own company, Disabled Life Media, which is located at disabledlifemedia.com. And he is a paraplegic from a motorcycle accident about 5 years ago. We will also attempt to take some callers halfway through our break or through our breaks. We take a break every 15 minutes. The call-in number is 213-943-3630, 213-943-3630, and just push the number 1 on your keypad. That tells me that you want to talk. For those of you who do not press number 1 on your keypad, that tells me that you are just calling in to the show to listen, because maybe there's no internet where you are. Maybe you don't have a computer. You don't have a smartphone. Or driving down the highway having a good time. So, if this is your very first time tuning in, you can go to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave and the first 4 letters of my last name, N-A-S-S, N like Nancy, .com. And you can actually learn about me and my lovely wife, Charlene. She's just wonderful. But that's another story. And our story, we have videos there. And also, you can learn what makes me qualified to have the audacity to call myself the caregiver's caregiver. You can also buy our books, view our videos, help yourself to a bunch of caregiver resources, all from our website. And I'm writing a new book, my third, entitled The Caregiver's Caregiver, A Guide to Avoiding Burnout and Surviving Grief. And you see, unlike my last two books, which were self-published, this one will be actually pitched to a major publisher through a literary agent who I was introduced to, who showed some interest in it. Now, unfortunately, that process takes a little longer, I should say. That process takes a lot longer than self-publishing, like 1 or 2 years instead of 30 or 60 days. So please be patient. That's really one reason why I started this radio program, so that you can get your weekly dose of tips and support and tools to put in your tool belt and help you survive caregiver burnout and grief. All right, that's enough of that. Welcome, Andrew.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you, Dave. I really appreciate the invitation on the show, and hello to everybody out there.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Let me just clarify something, because you are a paraplegic. Yes. You're not a caregiver, right? Obviously.
I am not a caregiver, no.
See, but I should never assume that. Last week I had a cancer survivor on who had beaten breast cancer, and then she beat ovarian cancer, and now she has liver cancer, fighting for her life right now.
Wow.
As we speak. And yet she's a caregiver to her husband, who suffered a stroke, and then he is suffering from the beginnings of dementia, and he also needs knee surgery in both of the knees, so he can't move around very good because he should have had the surgery before he had the stroke. So if anybody out there needs knee surgery, get it done now before some complications arise that make it impossible for you to get it. And then, you know, you'll be crippled in addition to whatever other health issue you have. So anyway, just to clarify, our audience, are caregivers mostly, and they're most likely experiencing caregiver burnout because it's at epidemic proportions, and is often unknowingly also stuck in the grief process along with their care receiver. Now, I like to not only interview caregivers but also care receivers because of the how the two experiences often go hand in hand. In other words, a husband may be caring for his wife with dementia who's experiencing loss and grief along with his wife. She lost her memory and independence while he lost his wife and his best friend and his companion and his housekeeper, etc. So even though, Andrew, you're not a caregiver, caregivers can still glean and benefit from your experiences of dealing with grief and gain valuable insights into how the care receiver's experiences are similar to their own.
Absolutely.
So while also
Absolutely.
Gaining more understanding, more empathy into appreciating all that they're going through and how amazing they really are, because every survivor has an amazing story as well as you. So it helps caregivers keep their proper perspective by reminding them that even though caregivers may have it hard, and we do, I'm a caregiver, but their loved one usually has it worse. So, anything you want to say before I start hammering questions at you?
Nope, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
All right. Do you want to just take maybe 30 seconds, 60 seconds, and just kind of give a brief introduction of who you are and where you come from and, what's going on in your life?
Absolutely. Well, again, my name is Andrew Angulo, and I'm a father of three wonderful kids, ranging from 13, 15, all the way up to 19. And I did have my accident 5 years ago, motorcycle accident that left me as a paraplegic. And now I was inspired to start my own company through the process. And of course, and I think we'll get into the meat and potatoes of it, but it didn't start off that way. I was working in a 9-to-5 job previously in operations management. And when I did have my accident, I was fortunate to be able to come back to work for a little bit of time, but I wasn't able to go on. Due to the economy, I was laid off. But I tried something different and came to this conclusion to try and succeed at a dream And I'm doing it, and that's what I'm doing today. And so it's exciting. It's exciting to be able to be a part of this community now and be able to reach out to everybody that have disabilities as well as the people that are caregivers out in the community. And I am very blessed to be in a position where I do have a voice, but also being able to raise up those around me that also have a voice and have something to say as well. Because unified, right. we can be loud, and we are forced to be reckoned with.
So
thank you.
I was watching your videos, and folks, this guy is amazing. He's a photographer. He's a videographer. Is that the right name for
right.
someone who makes video? Wow, I just made that up. And he's amazing. I would encourage you to go to his YouTube page. How do they get there, Andrew?
You can go to YouTube / ANGL747, which is A-N as in Nancy, G as in Gilbert, L as in Larry, 747. And you'll be able to see me there.
Great. I was just having fun watching your video one after the other. You were having a lot of fun and very creative. You thought of all of those. You produced, directed, wrote, everything, huh?
Yes, Darts. I did. Yes.
Amazing.
Thank you.
If anybody has any video needs or photography needs, you need to check this young man out. He is amazing.
Thank you.
I saw from your videos, by the way, that you have three beautiful children, as you just stated, but I didn't hear any details on the videos about your family life, you know, before or after your accident. Can you briefly tell us, you know, how old? Well, you already told us how old they are, but just explain your current family situation now. For example, you know, still married, divorced, single, do the kids live with you? You know, if you could just give us a little timeline on the accident, the marriage, the kids, how the accident affected his family
sure.
dynamics, and all that stuff.
Absolutely. So, my children, again, they're 13, 15, and 19 now, and take away 5 years. They were, of course, a little bit smaller. But during that time, they're really close with their mom and, of course, myself, and we've been very amicable. And we've been divorced since about 2005. And I'm very happy to say that we're very well-rounded, and they have the support between the both of us. And during which time, in 2006, I did remarry, and that was brief. When I say brief, it was about 3 years. And once I had my accident, things changed because we had a difficult foundation to really, really build our relationship upon. And we were very, very hard on each other, and we grieved very differently when I had the accident. And so, therefore, when I did have my accident a few months afterwards, it was best that we separated. And it was the best for both of us. It was difficult, but we moved on. And since 2009, I have remained single. And to this day, I am just focused on work and on the needs of my kids as much as I can be there for them. And of course, there's always the heart flutter for a special person in my life that I'm so thankful that the Lord has brought just a friend that comes around now that you know, as long as we're both searching for God's heart, you know, we will meet in the middle. And we will just continue to move forward. And with the family now, the family dynamic now is we're all together. We still have the same support system as before. And the kids are doing well. And, you know, just keep on trucking, basically, is what I'm doing, just keeping my eye focused on what I'm trying to do here and trying to accomplish.
Because in one of your videos, you talked about having a girlfriend, and then you brought out this poodle that started licking your face. I'm confused.
Oh, yes. No, yes, that her name is Tessa, and she's definitely
this
adorable.
This is the poodle.
This is the poodle. That's actually a Cocker Spaniel. And the love interest today is an incredible friend of mine. And we, like I said, we are taking it day by day and following and going after God's heart. And as long as we do that, and we'll see where our future leads us to. And so I am excited about that. But that's where we're at.
You've graduated from a Cocker Spaniel to a real-life person.
I did graduate.
You know, these are baby steps, and this is very good because, you know, as I learned in What About Bob, baby steps are how you get from one point A to point B, you know, just a little bit of design. So that's great. We're coming up on our break. I've got more questions to ask you, but let us take a break and we'll start out fresh. So, folks, we will be right back.
Listening to Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, on Blog Talk Radio, where each week we talk about surviving the grief process and avoiding caregiver burnout. We'll be right back.
One day at Chevy's, Peter saw Carlita eat a fajita, and he needed to meet her. From then on, nothing could be sweeter than seeing Carlita and Peter seated for a Chevy's fajita. Grilled over mesquite, Carlita and Peter were Chevy's fajita repeaters, not retreaters. They'd eat a fajita on the street, or for fun on a tortita, with a Cuervo Gold margarita. Carlita succeeded to eat a Fuego Habanero fajita on a parking meter. But Peter needed a tequila-fired chicken fajita only while seated. He was discreeter than Carlita with his fajita. But one day on his way to meet her, Peter rode a speedy cheetah with a San Antonio steak fajita for his beloved Carlita. He needed to feed her. And so as Carlita and Peter repeatedly conceded, "Mamacita, you just can't beat a Chevy's fajita." Come into Chevy's today for a Eat a Fajita Fiesta. Chevy's Viva la Fiesta. And don't forget to eat a fajita with a Chevy's Cuervo Gold House Margarita. Nothing could be neater.
You'll find the legacy of over 100 years of racing behind every Ford we build today. And tomorrow.
Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, Avoiding Burnout and Surviving Grief with Dave Nassani on Blog Talk Radio. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you. Join Dave and his guests now as they resume their discussion.
And we're back talking to my guest, Andrew. Oh my gosh. And I can't remember how to pronounce his last name. Aguilo. Say it again, Andrew.
Angulo.
Now, I'm sure you tell people how to remember how to pronounce your last name. Give them some advice here.
No, it's very different variations, but it's Angulo. You gotta emphasize
Angulo.
The U. Angulo. Yes, that's
Angulo.
That's it.
I think I got
there
that.
There you go.
Are you Italian? Buongiorno. You Italiano? Bambino, my Goomba, Andrew.
Wonderful.
Angulo. Okay,
there
I got
go.
It.
Love
I got it.
Love it.
Now, before I ask you any more questions, we have a caller, Andrew. And
yes, hello.
Oh,
hello.
Who is that? Yes, who are
hi,
you?
Hi, this is Mark.
Mark.
Hi, this is Mark. Hi, Andrew.
We almost hung up on you, Mark.
Yeah, I'm sorry. 0072 got me. I forgot my own phone number.
Well, you're on the line with you're on the line with Andrew Angulo.
Yes, Andrew. Do you know me? This is Mark Richards.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Hey, good. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You know,
how are you?
I just found out about your website, and it's very wonderful, very thought provoking. I loved the one video of you where you were trying to transfer back into your chair, and the chair went rolling away, and fabulous.
Thank you so much, Mark. Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
It was thought-provoking. I love the public service message at the end. That was great.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, no. We thought we'd create a little skit, and I basically wanted to do it. And a friend of mine, I just brought up the idea, and we shot it in one afternoon, and it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, what's the website again? Your website? It's I can't remember the name of it.
It's disabledlifemedia.com.
Yeah, fabulous, fabulous. If anybody's not seen that, you got to go to it. I just kind of picked up, and so I'm kind of not fully involved with everything that's been said so far. I apologize. But one of the things that I talked to Dave briefly, David, the host there, and briefly, and one of the things that I was wondering about, because I don't really know much about your injury, although I know that you crashed your motorcycle. You're relatively recently injured, only 5 years now. I was injured 16 years ago.
Wow.
It took me a long time, because I know we're talking about grief. It took me a long time to admit to myself that something really had changed, in a sense. People kept telling me, well, have you gone through the grief process yet? And I really didn't understand what that meant for a long time. And it wasn't until I started getting depressed about what had really happened that I realized that, oh, okay, well, I guess that's part of the grief process. And now that I've been educated, if you will, in what that means, I've crossed that barrier. I've passed that barrier, and I've come out the other end and accepted what's gone on and you know, where I am and all. Where are you at in that process?
Well, the initial grieving process was, of course, when my accident happened, and I know it's subjective especially when I talk about the grieving process, because each individual experiences their disability in very different ways.
Yes.
They look for inspiration in very different ways, and that's through people or through their support system. And of course, in my case, my grieving process, I go through it today, but I knew that I needed to draw my strength for my kids, so they can see that their father was getting back on track and trying to get back to life. And that was the original idea, especially when I started creating videos, was really to not only prove it to myself, but also prove to them that, you know, that regardless of my personal situation, that I was trying to do something creative, new, involving them. And that that helped me when I saw that they got excited when we started doing videos. And, of course, throughout that process, when I wasn't doing videos, there was the dark nights where I was battling my demons and feeling the guilt and the shame of now being treated differently, of having to adjust to life very differently, and the unforgiveness because of the situation itself. I mean, that's all the grieving process of even not only the emotional, but also the physical aspects of it too, because everything changed. I can't reach in high places. So it took some time. And even today, you know, I certainly still mourn my lost abilities, but it's more on the end of now I can prove it to myself. Now I'm proving myself that I can get through. But it was certainly very, very difficult. I had my many, many moments of depression, and I still get through those times where I'm feeling ill or feeling out of sorts, and everything, you know, it feels like the whole world crumbles around you.
Right.
But,
do you work?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. You don't work at all, right? I mean, you're not fully employed?
I'm no longer working a full-time job. I was,
right.
Like 5 months after my injury, I went straight back to work just because I needed to be able to try to move on quickly. I did work
right.
for about a year and a half full-time, which I was uh-huh. very, very grateful for
uh-huh.
that transition. Again, I was when I was laid off, I decided to just pursue the dream of being able to see what this project at that time was, just creating videos and then finally got into photography,
right.
what I could do with that. And so now that's my full-time thing,
yeah,
and just taking
great.
On clients, yeah.
That's awesome, yeah, because I actually, when I was injured back in 98, back when you were a kid. back in 98, I actually stopped working because I realized that my full-time job had to be taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And that was really hard. I mean, I worked my entire life. I was 38 when I was injured. And I'm showing my age, but it was really hard because I'd worked all my life, all since I was 16, and it was really hard to stop working. But I realized that I couldn't work full time, exercise, eat right, take care of my family, you know, with my wife at the same time, and also with the, you know, just like you know, and the audience may not know yet, but or may not know, but. There's a lot of things that we who are disabled, I'm T4 paraplegic, a lot of things that we have to deal with that most people don't have to.
Right.
You know, and it's, I mean, there's things that come up during the day, and I'm grateful to sometimes glad I'm home.
Right.
You know.
Well, I have a question for both of you, actually, you know, talking about the grief process. And you both did a magnificent job explaining how you both dealt with it. But I'm curious, how I'll ask you first, Andrew, how did your family deal with the loss? You know, let's start with, you know, your first wife, then your second wife, and now your kids, and then your parents. You know, everyone deals with it in a different way. Can you kind of do a broad explanation as to how each of them kind of dealt with it, the differences or the similarities?
Sure, absolutely. When it came to my family, my immediate thoughts is going to be my kids, and I'll start there. Was they were afraid when they see their dad laying on a hospital bed, and they were just broken. Or that they were told the news that he broke his back and is paralyzed. They were very much afraid. They didn't know how to approach me. They didn't know what to do at that point. So they were scared, as well as my family itself, my mother, my father, my sister, and my family friends. They didn't know first of all, they didn't know the prognosis and if that was going to be a permanent thing, even though it could be, because it's very subjective from person to person. They didn't know what kind of return I would get. And when it came to my kid's mom, you know, she was, of course, very concerned because I'm the father of, you know, of our kids, and they need their dad. And she was very, very sensitive to that, very aware of that. So they were very, very supportive. And even so, with my wife at the time of my accident, she was very scared, of course, when your spouse, anybody's spouse, goes through a very tragic transition. The whole world's changed. The lifestyle changes. The dynamic between the relationship at that point seemed like it was changing. And so we all had different ways of grieving. And it was not until a point where I looked at everybody and said, you know what, guys, it's going to be okay. I'm going to make it. I'm alive. It wasn't until I started making that conscious effort and finding power and the strength and the confidence within myself to say, it's okay. I'm going to continue. You know, things are going to be different, but I'm going to continue on. Did everybody around me start seeing, okay, you can do it. You know, he's going to make it. He's going to be okay. And
right.
I do have, I do have friends and that are out there that also planted those seeds inside of me too, because even when I was laying down, I mean, everything was so dire at that particular point. Everything was so dark. I didn't think I was going to make it through. And I have plenty of people that I owe my life to that spoke life to me, that gave me that hope and gave me the encouragement that I was going to make it.
How long did it take before you could say that you were going to be all right?
It did take, I'm going to say, there were different steps, I would say, different kind of levels of I'm going to make it. When I was freshly hurt, still in the hospital, and transferred over to the rehab unit where they were going to start working on therapy for me. At that point, I was in dire straits. I was pretty upset about what was going on. But then I realized at that point I have to be strong for my kids. So I was putting on the smile, putting on the makeup. Saying, "Oh, it's going to be okay, guys. It's going to be okay," you know, and telling my family it's going to be okay when I felt like I was lying to myself. Mm-hmm. Then with the therapist there and with the staff and, of course, my friends around me that continue to encourage me, I started really feeling like, okay, I can really do this. I can still get back to it. And by the time I was in rehab for about 3 months, almost mm-hmm. 3 months. And then by the time I transitioned out of the rehab unit back home, I felt at that point, I'm going to make it. I have to. There's no way, no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, I have to. There's so.
That never was, underestimate the power of encouragement.
Correct.
So,
yes.
So let me ask you, Mark. You have a wife, obviously, and you have a child, right? How many children?
Well, I have two, and at the time of my injury, my eldest son was six, and so for the first 6 years of his life, he knew me as, you know, the dad that would come home, change into sweats, and roll around and play with him on the carpet. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was just two, or almost three, and, you know, so she, basically her whole life, she's 19 now, he's 22, she's just known me as the dad who's a, you know, paraplegic. He was angry for many, many years, and that was hard for me. He was. It wasn't until, almost really until he went away to college that now we're like good buddies. But it took a long time for him to overcome. He was mad. He wasn't mad at me. He was mad at the situation. But he was, they call it sometimes kicking the dog. He took it out on me. And that was really hard on me. I've always been a real positive person pretty much my whole life, all the way from when I was a teenager. I was doing sales and doing different things, different projects. And so when this hit me, it kind of kicked me in the butt and really slowed me down for the first few years. Unlike you, Andrew, I did not have a rehab experience. Mm-hmm. I was at UCLA for 6 months, actually. And I did not even know, for those who don't know what this means, I didn't know how to transfer. What that means is I didn't know how to get from my wheelchair into a bed or any other surface back and forth without using a piece of wood, a sliding board, to get there. It wasn't until 3 years later that my wife wrote a grant, and I went to Northridge Hospital here in Southern California, for those who aren't here, to learn the basic skills of how to deal with being a wheelchair user. So for the first 3 years, I was like, I didn't know anything. That was the hardest part. Once I got the basics down, I actually started a video business back in 2002, just a few years after I was injured. I started a website design business that I called Spider Design, after designing websites for like spiders. Anyways. So that's what kept me busy for a little bit, for a couple of years, and that was a lot of fun. But it was hard to deal with the kids because, you know, I didn't know how to deal with them. I couldn't go out, and I couldn't throw a football to my kid, to my boy. I couldn't, you know, run around and teach my daughter how to ride a bicycle like I did my son when he was, you know, four or five. So it was a challenge for me to deal with that. I dealt with it the best I could. And I think they actually came out pretty good. I mean, I think both kids are stronger for them seeing me go through life with this challenge and come out on the other end okay.
Yeah. Mm. Good for you, Mark. And thank you for calling. We're up at the top of the hour. We need to take a break. But thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it.
You bet.
And we
you
will
bet.
Be right back. Thank you.
Two
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
Keep your head together. And we are back. Wow, that was a powerful call. Everyone grieves in their own way. And I just am fascinated how Mark was telling us that his son was still grieving, stuck in anger, which is like the second stage. You know, he still had to go through bargaining and depression and reach acceptance. But, you know, that's a scary thought that your kids could go through like 10 or 15 years of grieving, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So how are your kids doing? Have you found any anger coming from any of your kids? Maybe not angry at you, but angry just at the situation, similar to Mark's situation?
I do believe that at some level, my children have very, very disappointed or I would say are grieving the loss of the abilities that I have, because we have been so active. I mean, we would go out and play soccer at the park and ride bikes and basketball, football, skateboards. I was a very active dad, and they do miss that. And
They remember
that.
I know
part of that. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so things are different, and they do have those moments where, of course, they wish that I was able to get back on my feet. But I do know, and I take solace on the fact that they do understand that that I'm still here for them, and I believe that they are content with that. So
yeah, I mean, just judging from your videos, I mean, you've got your kids in your videos, a lot of them, and you guys are having a blast. And I mean, I don't know anybody in your condition who does what you do. I mean, you were going like water skiing or jet skiing with some special contraption made to. You keep going to these expos, you know, and they have all these cool gadgets and things for disabled people to make them live as normal a life as possible. I would encourage everyone to go to his website. Give me that address again.
It's disabledlifemedia.com.
Sorry, if I was a good host, I would have written that down and have it right at the tip of my tongue. But I'm still
you're a great host, Dave. Don't be so hard on yourself.
So there's lots of things out there that will make your life a lot easier if you are paraplegic or paralyzed on one side or both sides or what have you. You're living with your parents now, I understand, right, Andrew?
There is a transition I made just recently. I've been out of the house for close to a little over 15 years, And just recently, I made a transition and made a choice, and I'm so thankful to be back. I haven't had a home-cooked meal in forever. But basically, I had plans to be able to move from my original place in my apartment where I was at. And I was in a relationship where I thought perhaps that we would go to make the next move to move in. And we cut it short. And so, therefore, I didn't have a lot of time to make that transition to find a new place or anything like that. And so it was an incredible timing because not only have I been able to come back and really get much, much closer to my parents than we ever have before, but also they were supporting me to help me financially to continue my endeavors with Disabled Life Media to get it off the ground, to get it to a new place. And so it's a great, great start for me, and I'm so thankful to be back home.
Cool. So what's it like living back home? And I don't think you explained how your parents dealt with the loss as well.
We'll rewind. As far as my parents, both my parents have been my biggest cheerleaders. My mother especially has been a huge cheerleader for me from day one. And she's continued to shower me with love and support and has always believed that I would be able to make it. And she'd always push me. And she always said to me, to find my inner strength and to continue to have faith that God will get me through it. Even at that point, I couldn't even fathom what was going to happen next, what I was going to do next. But my mother's been an incredible, incredible support. She's an incredible woman in my life. My father as well has been incredibly supportive in everything that I've done. And they had their way of grieving as well because of the accident. But now just seeing them today, I think that's they are happy. They're happy that I'm home. I think for a mother's love, their children never grow up. From a father's perspective as well, you know, their children never grow up. I could never look at my kids and go, okay, you're adults now. get out of here type of thing. And I'm saying that as sensitive as possible because I know every family is different. Every family dynamic is different. And within mine, my parents are very supportive even today. And even seeing in retrospect, seeing how when I left the house originally back in, I think it was like 97, 98, that's when I left the house, to coming back now, you know, which I just came back maybe about 5 months ago. Just seeing how much time has gone by and seeing how time has, it's just going by so quickly. It made me appreciate my parents a lot more, and it strengthened our relationship a lot more, and I'm very thankful for it.
Yeah, you're right about the relationship with the kids. You know, we've got a 45-year-old, a 35-year-old, and a 50-year-old, and they're still kids. They never stop being your kids.
They never stop being kids.
Let me shift gears a little. Where did you get the idea of starting this company, Disabled Life Media? Was it always in your mind, or did it just pop in, you know, after your accident? Tell me about that.
Yeah. When I had my accident, the one of the ways that I wanted to be able to express myself was I got inspired by watching YouTube videos. I started online looking for videos that would help me understand how to navigate in the world, and I didn't see a lot of videos that were entertaining but at the same time helpful. There was a lot of helpful information, and I just thought, hey, maybe I'll throw my hat in the ring and try it out, and I'll include my kids in it. And so I did. I started it, and with no experience, I took the plunge, and I remember I took about $600 or $700 that I really didn't have, but I said, okay, well, I'll buy a camera, I'll buy a tripod, I'll buy a microphone, and I did it. And as I kept going, I had so much fun with it that I started gaining these more ideas, writing scripts,
some things that I knew I wouldn't be able to do at that point that I knew some down the line I'll do it. I'll be able to do it. When I have the resources, I'm going to do it. And then, of course, within that journey, I was inspired by some magazines that are photography magazines, and I absolutely love photography, just the expressiveness through the lens and, of course, the different mm-hmm. types of photography. And so makeup and fashion has always been something that it just fascinated me. And I have a good friend of mine who her name is Bobby, and she's an incredibly talented makeup artist and a good friend of mine. And I asked her one day, I said, hey, why don't we try something different? I have an idea. I'm going to buy a camera. I'm going to buy a good camera, and you bring your makeup talents, and let's just put something together. I'll call a few people that I know, and let's create a theme. And so our first theme was Dia de los Muertos, which is Day of the Dead theme, mm-hmm. just makeup, and we did it. And at that point, I realized, I said, you know, I could continue to keep doing this. You know, and I took the photos, and I said, I think we have something here. And I talked to her a little bit, and I did it. I came up with the logo. I decided to come up with a name for it, and that's how it really started. It was just kind of an idea of being able to just do something creative with people within the community, yeah. And it just blossomed into the possibilities and an avenue of being able to do this on a consistent basis, photography and videography.
Well, you're very talented, and I'm impressed. So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll continue talking about this. So we'll be right back.
Really?
You're listening to Dave Nassani, the Caregiver's Caregiver, on Blog Talk Radio, where each week we talk about surviving the grief process and avoiding caregiver burnout. We'll be right back.
Did you work Tuesday night?
Hi, I'm Deborah, and this is how Wawa's new pancake sizzling changed my
Tuesday?
Life. You see, first of all, I live with an ogre. To be fair, my husband isn't an ogre all the time, just when he wakes up hungry. And that's pretty much every morning. It always starts the same, growling, knuckles dragging on the ground, wanting to eat the pets. Oh, boy.
Can he make good food?
As you can imagine, all that ogreing created stress in our relationship. But then, Laura came out with a new pancake sizzly breakfast sandwich. A complete breakfast sandwich my husband could pick up fast at Wawa to snap out of the ogre mode. Just the thought of cheese between two pancakes plus a cup of Wawa's award-winning coffee was enough to calm my husband's inner beast. So now, although my husband still wakes up in a foul, ogre-y sort of mood and smell, we quickly remedy it with a trip to Wawa for the new pancake sizzly and a cup of fresh coffee.
Eat pancake sizzly now!
Or was that a cup of Joe? I forget. Hey, it's time to go! Honey, put down that cat. Every time.
It's a place where mornings are manageable, where solutions are found on every corner. A place when you get the most out of a lunch
pick
hour.
Pick up your thing. I don't know why you want
where there's
it.
No distinction between day and night.
$8,000.
A place to go when you need it, but want it good. Oh, thank heaven.
And tell him what? Tell him you're homeless again?
Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, avoiding burnout and surviving grief with Dave Nassani on Blog Talk Radio. The whole purpose of the show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you. Join Dave and his guests now as they resume their discussion.
We are back. And we are back with Andrew.
As dramatic as possible.
As dramatic as possible. So before we went off on our break, I was asking about your company, Disabled Life Media, and you were sharing with us how you started it and what have you. But I want to talk about that public service video you did. I think it's called Don't Be Too Proud to Ask for Help. Was it really a public service, or just you were just?
I gave you many visions.
And also, I want to know: are you really? Were you really too proud to ask for help at one time in your life? I mean, that thing was hilarious. I did not see that coming. I thought it was just going to be, here's what I do. Here's how amazing I am. You know, look at how I can throw the thing in the car and bring it out and this and that. But you just gave it a hilarious twist, and I couldn't stop laughing. So go ahead.
No, is it really a public service announcement? Yes. We do have my personal public service announcement. It really was just to be really funny as a skit, and I don't know why I thought, you know, Saturday Night Live type of stuff, and I was like, hey, I can try my hand at some comedy skits and such. But it did really kind of really mirror the actions in my life, because and I could probably say this comfortably for a lot of other people within our community, is that we like to do things ourselves, and we feel at some level that we need to prove that to people, because the stigma is that a lot of people need help. However, again, sensitively, I need to say that sensitively, because people, there are a lot of people that need more assistance than others, that have different levels of injury, and they have just their abilities vary from person to person. But even still, what we can do on our own, we try to do on our own as best as possible. And I do fight. And I'm not saying fight, but you know, I do argue with people that love me, and they see me they're struggling to get the can off the top shelf, and they say, let me get it. No, I got it. Hey, I got it. You know, and I may be using a broom, but I'm going to get it. You know, and that's just the stubbornness in me. And also, and like I said, I could comfortably say that for a lot of people, but we just sometimes just need to prove it to ourselves. And with this particular skit, there are many things that we just need to put our pride aside and ask for help. And that was just something kind of a comical twist in that. So it was for me, but it was also a public service announcement.
No, it'd
be funny. Yeah,
you really struck a nerve, because I know for me, and I bet you it's happened everywhere. You know, I'm at the supermarket and I see somebody in their wheelchair struggling. You know, just struggling. And I'll go up and say, hey, can I help you? No, I got it.
Yeah.
Like you walk away, well, okay, buddy. Last time I'll ask, offer any help,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
I mean, you say that to yourself. And I've seen other people do it too, you know. But and at the gas station, same thing. You know, some people will come in and I will offer them help. And I've got it. But my wife, during her therapy, you know, half her body is paralyzed, so the occupational therapist told me, as her caregiver, that, you know, don't always come to her rescue, you know. So she's in the kitchen. She does a lot of cooking. She's a gourmet cook. So she's always reaching. She can stand up, and she's reaching for those top shelves. You know, she's like on her toes, and she's just, you know. And her mother, when her mother was there, would just rush and get it for her. And I would say, no, the occupational therapist says don't do that. So I'm like, come on, honey, you almost got it. You know, still, you know, go on your tiptoes. You're almost there. You know, and of course, her mother thought I was cruel for doing such a thing. But very, very important, and I loved it.
Thank you.
My next question for you, Andrew, is what is the vision that you have for your new company and your life from this point on? I mean, where do you actually see this thing growing to, and how big?
Well, I love to think on large scales, and my next move really is
like
really partnering up with people that do want to get creative and want to do something new, because being able to expand is just not a one-person job. It's, you know, it takes a
it takes a lot of great minds and a lot of creative minds. And I'm at that point now where I am asking the people within the community or people that want to look for doing a creative outlet to do something different. And I'd love to be able to open different projects, because Disabled Life Media, and the word media implies many different facets of media. It's not just TV and photography. There's radio, there's music, there's artistry, there's all different types of areas that I would love to be able to touch. And so when it comes to a vision, there's a very big a big area of just vast. I mean, I can continue to project, but there's certainly a 2-year plan, a 3-year plan, and a 5-year plan, and a 10-year plan. And I believe that slowly, as things start opening up and as opportunities arise, we'll get there slowly. And I'm looking forward to it. So far, it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. A lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
So if any of you out there want to partner with Andrew, then just how can someone contact you?
Well, the best way is coming to the website, and we do have a contact form, and the email's on there, which is disabledlifemedia@gmail.com, or directly through the website itself. There's a contact form, and just let people with the availability of people having the opportunity to write something in, saying, hey, I'd like to blog, and I do have. Very thankful that I have a few bloggers out there, which is Maria, Kelsey, Stephanie, Bridget. Thank you, girls. You guys do an incredible job. And they like to talk about different subjects within the community and on fashion or lifestyle and events going on. There's many avenues there, many avenues.
And again, that website is disabledlifemedia.com.
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you, Andrew, you mentioned that this accident changed your life when you and I first met.
Yeah.
And you said it turned it around for the better. Now, that's a profound statement that you don't hear too many people calling a tragedy kind of a good thing. Can you explain?
Yes, I would love to. I believe in hindsight, just looking at the way things were going in my life at the time, they were great, and I was very happy, or I thought it was. And there's always challenges, and there have always been challenges, and there will always continue to be challenges. But having this accident granted me the opportunity of seeing life very differently, and realizing that there's some things I certainly took for granted, and also ways that I have been able to help other people in ways that I never thought I would. Being able to encourage people, because I'm also in a chair, I can also relate to a lot of people, and not only within this community, but even in the able-bodied community. And just by turning your attitude around, and not to say that my attitude is always up, because like I said, there are certain days that, you know, it's tough, but it is continuing to have a positive spirit with the circumstance, and really just taking time and appreciating everybody and everything around you. And at that time, I was going pretty fast, and I didn't see a lot of these things that I see today, and it strengthened a lot of my relationships that weren't strengthened before. And that's how I see it, as an incredibly positive thing for me.
Awesome, awesome. That's so great. Now, do you still get discouraged? Do you still get frustrated? Do you still get impatient? Or do you sometimes just feel like giving up? And if so, how do you snap yourself out of it? You seem like as a person.
Oh, yeah. No, are you kidding? Everything's perfect, always, 100% of the time. There's never a problem. Oh, no, and I'm being facetious, of course. But yes, and sensitively, yeah, things are not always as rosy as they seem on the outside. But truthfully is that there are many times I grieve, even to this day. When I get tired easy, or when I get ill, I fall ill.
the difficult part is trying to remain independent as much as possible. And of course, I think the pride thing comes kind of kicks in, saying, "Well, I can do anything. I can do everything. I don't need anybody's help." And a lot of us really that have transitioned from being able-bodied to having a disability. I believe that everybody continues to mourn their lost abilities. And so there's a lot of times that situations arise, and or even when I'm out and there's curbs everywhere or stairs everywhere and everybody's going one way and I have to take the long way around, you know. And, you know, it just could be as simple as that. And it just kind of puts a damper on the mindset and on the attitude. But, I still try to make the best of everything and try to paint everything as brightly as possible, because I'm still here, I'm still alive, and I still have the opportunity to influence people around me. And that's what we all have. We all are people of influence. And I believe that people with disabilities, that when they show their grief, and again, very subjective from each individual. I cannot speak for everybody because I don't understand everybody's situation. But I do know that when you are doing everything you can to be as positive as possible and as upbeat as possible, the people around you see that, and they feel inspired by it, and you make a difference in their life. And that's kind of the idea of what I try to do.
Wow, awesome. Listen, we're going to take another break, and we will be right back because I got a couple more questions I want to ask you.
Great.
You're listening to Dave Nassani, the Caregiver's Caregiver, on Blog Talk Radio, where each week we talk about surviving the grief process and avoiding caregiver burnout. We'll be right back.
With DirecTV pay-per-view, you always have the best seats in the house. No driving, no lines, no hassle, just a huge selection of today's top movies, ready at the push of a button. The hottest stars, the latest releases, order DirecTV pay-per-view, starting at channel 125. DirecTV pay-per-view, always the best seats in the house.
Life is not just food, sleep, and toothpaste. It's a series of choices. Both work and play, practical and impractical. Basketball practice or piano lessons, asparagus, or French fries. And sometimes you have to compromise with sensible shoes, wash and wear, and beige. Life is changing. We're changing too. We think you deserve quality, whether it's at a table, a desk, a car seat, or the pool. The stuff you need to live, and the stuff that makes life worth living. Not just ingredients for meals, ingredients for life. Safeway.
Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, avoiding burnout and surviving grief with Dave Nassani on Blog Talk Radio. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you. Join Dave and his guests now as they resume their discussion.
And we're back with Andrew. Andrew, before I ask you what I wanted to ask you, I was watching your video, and I noticed you were doing wheelies with your wheelchair. Now, isn't that dangerous? I mean, my wife has a wheelchair that has anti-tip bars on it, and if she goes up a ramp just a little too steep, she can go all the way back. And one time she actually did, because she has a inside wheelchair, which is a little top-heavy and not too safe to take outside when she was in the house. But we have a little ramp that goes up, and she just gunned it and leaned back, and she just went down, you know. Does that happen to you
at
all?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
many times. Now,
so
these
are dangerous chairs that you're on.
These are, well, the wheelchairs are, they're
They have different tipping points, but it is very vital for any wheelchair user to be able to do a wheelie to get over cracks or curbs or any kind of dirt on the ground. And I can't profess that I'm that good at it. I'm really just touching the surface as far as the ability of doing a wheelie. There's a great group of gals out there called from the Walk and Roll Foundation. They're all dancers, and even all the dancers out there that really know how to really lean their chair back. Now, I would consider that wheelies. But I do some wheelies, and there have been some times I over-wheelied and landed straight on my back, and just luckily haven't hit my head hard enough to where I'm not afraid of doing it again.
That's what I thought. See, I can identify danger. Danger, Will Robinson.
Yes.
So here's my question. What advice would you give to my caregiver audience out there that, as they care for their loved ones, some of which have spinal cord injuries? Mm-hmm. Any advice?
The advice I can really really provide is just continue to encourage. And I believe that depending on the situation or the disability itself, there are certain challenges as far as being encouraged or being motivated, and the caregiver is the person that just really provides that stable point in that person's life. And it almost reminds me of when you're growing up as a child, when you have a parent constantly smiling at you, you feel safe. And it's almost the same way in a position of caregiver, is being able to continue to encourage and just lift up and continue to speak words of life and support. And like I said, there's many different situations. There's many different challenges within a dynamic as a caregiver. But that's really the way to, I feel, the way I could just contribute to them, because there's been many caregivers in my life that provided just support and just the encouragement that I needed, even on those very dark, dark days too. Mm.
So you don't have a caregiver anymore right now?
No, when I mentioned caregiver, I really were referring to the therapists in my life that really had that were taking care of me during that time. But no, I've never truly had a caregiver other than my mother, and she's been incredible, and
sure.
She's been my support. Yeah.
Well, we've covered everything that we wanted to know about you. And I wanted to ask you, is there anything else that you would like to say now? Totally unscripted. You're speaking to a caregiver audience who are probably burned out. They haven't learned how to put their oxygen mask on first. They're probably grieving. They don't even know what grief is. You know, maybe they're angry. I just came from a funeral yesterday, and this mother, she's about 50, in her 50s, she died suddenly, liver disease, and nobody was ready for it. You know, she left three beautiful children, one of them married, and a wonderful husband. And I was talking to him a little bit at the funeral yesterday, and I said, "How you doing?" You know, and he says, "I'm angry. I'm so angry. You know, just angry. This shouldn't have happened. You know, I'm angry." And so Mark spoke about his son being angry for over 10 years. You know, people who are in anger or who are in denial or who are in depression, you know, they rarely understand what's going on because they're just consumed with that emotion. What can you say to help those people get out of their grief?
Absolutely. No,
and
absolutely.
Reach the goal of acceptance, because that's a wonderful place to be.
And
like you said, there's different stages of acceptance.
Sure, absolutely. And anger is a righteous feeling. I mean, we all have a right to be angry. And in situations that we are not prepared for, we call out, you know, to higher powers, and we wonder why we are in situations that we are in, or that certain things happen to people that we love or we care about, or we're in awe of where did we go wrong? Did I do something wrong, or am I being punished for something? And I think first and foremost is acknowledging that it's okay to be angry. And in each situation, it is looking for the answer within yourselves, and knowing that anger just tears us apart from the inside out. It doesn't change the situation. It doesn't. And as righteous as the situation is, or as righteous as your anger is, we all experience it at some point in our lives, and we have a choice. We either let it consume us, or we let it go. And I know it's a very difficult task to let go of anger or let go of resentment. But we look at the days, and we know that old saying is, you know, that the night is the darkest, or the day is the darkest right before the dawn,
right.
And it's looking forward to that dawn is what's going to bring them out of their darkness, and choosing to look at the positive things in life as opposed to the negatives. And again, it's very difficult to generalize that statement, because each situation is different. But we all know, as human beings, we all know deep down inside that when we have seeds of anger, and that's growing within inside of us, all we produce is weeds, and all we produce is hate, and that's all we produce is negativity around us. And in order for us to be healed, is we need to let go. And it's finding faith in yourself, and finding faith in light to be able to just let those things go. And that's all I really can say.
Yeah, you're so right. You know, let me just briefly go over what the grief process is. You know, it usually starts out as denial. You know, something happens and you say, "Oh my God, this isn't really happening." You know, you're in shock, and you just can't comprehend the full episode of what's going on in your life. And after you linger in denial for a while, because after a while, unless you go into a form of mental illness, you're going to come out of anger, because reality forces us back into reality. And anger is the next thing that usually happens, simply because, you know, we realize that this really is happening to us. And so now I'm angry. And I'm angry at God. I'm angry at the hospital. I'm angry at, you know, those closest to us that we can vent our anger at. The funniest story I've ever heard is I know this lady who was diagnosed with cancer. And when she went to the doctor for a checkup, and the doctor says, you know, you have cancer. And she was in such denial, and then she was in such anger, that she just banged her hand on the doctor's desk. She says, "Well, I didn't have cancer when I came in here," you know. And I mean, that is just so typical of how we react to things like that. The next step usually is bargaining, you know, some kind of negotiation. Okay, anger didn't get me anywhere. Maybe I can negotiate my way out of this, you know. And obviously, some things you cannot negotiate your way out of. You know, I mean, if you have a boyfriend, girlfriend, and they break up, and, you know, you have a broken heart, you have loss, you're experiencing grief, you know, then maybe you can negotiate something like, well, can we still be friends? You know, mm-hmm. But when you have a spinal cord injury, or you have a death, or something that you obviously, it's non-negotiable. So that usually can bring on some other things like guilt. Have you ever experienced guilt,
Oh,
Andrew?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Going
no, the answer is yes. No, I've experienced guilt. I've experienced unforgiveness towards myself and shame. Yeah, absolutely.
you know, and I've shared this before on the show, but I have a cute little analogy that I love to use for guilt, and those who've heard it a million times, I apologize, but for those who haven't heard it, it's really good. I liken guilt as a disposable diaper, you know, and the poop part is the guilt, and the diaper part is, you know, our conscience. So basically, if you're feeling guilty, you know, guilt is supposed to be a good thing because it's supposed to alert us, hey, you know, danger, danger, you're feeling guilty, something's wrong. And so there's two stages that you have to look at. One is, are you feeling deserved guilt, justified guilt, or are you feeling undeserved guilt, that you have no reason to be feeling this? So let's first take the deserved guilt. Let's say you did something, you know, that you deserve to feel guilty about, you know. Like the disposable diaper, the guilt is the poop, it goes into the diaper. And unless we change that diaper, it's going to, you know, cause a really bad diaper rash on our butt, and it's going to cause a really bad diaper rash on our conscience. So my advice is to acknowledge the guilt, acknowledge that you did something wrong, fix it, apologize, go make restitution, go turn yourself into the police, do whatever you need to do to fix it and to relieve yourself of the guilt. And then once you do that, once you paid the price of your penalty, you take that guilt, you throw it away, because it's the diaper has done its job, it's caught the poop, it's caught the guilt, you throw it away. Now, the next step is if it's undeserved guilt. And there's a lot of people out there, Andrew, as you know, who are or just love to dispense guilt on people when they don't deserve it. I mean, my first thing is a Jewish mother, right? What's more guilty than a Jewish mother? You know, there's even jokes, you internet Jewish mother guilt jokes, and you know, the list is endless. And I think of Red Fox, you know, in Sanford and Son. You're probably not old enough to remember that show. Maybe
I remember
are.
Sanford and Son. Oh, absolutely.
He would always make his son Lamont feel guilty into doing whatever he wanted him to do by holding his chest and looking up to heaven and saying, Elizabeth, I'm coming for you, honey. You know, and he's, okay, Dad, you know, what do you want me to do? So if you're feeling that your guilt is undeserved, and if you're not sure, ask a trusted friend to confirm. And if you can, with assurance, say to yourself, I don't deserve this. I'm sorry. This is undeserved guilt. Well, you simply do the same thing that you did with the deserved guilt. It's in the diaper. It caught it. The diaper did what it was supposed to do. You just throw it away because it's undeserved. There's no one to apologize to. There's no one to make amends to. You don't have to turn yourself into the police. You don't have to pay a penalty. It's undeserved. In either case, the guilt is gone and thrown away. I mean, that's why they call it a disposable diaper. And I am amazed when I talk to people and find out that they have been living guilt for years, and some for a lifetime. And it's so unnecessary because guilt is just not a good thing, and it will actually damage your health. That
oh,
and
absolutely.
Unforgiveness. You know, I like
absolutely.
To say that people who don't forgive people, and this woman, this funeral that I was just at, you know, one of her traits that she had was she was angry at her sister, she was angry at this one, she was angry at that one, and she just wouldn't let it go, you know? And we waste all this energy on stuff that's killing us, you know? And I like to say unforgiveness is like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. It's just, you're
sure.
just killing yourself.
Sure.
And it never gets to the other person. That person that you hate and that you're, you know, you don't forgive, they're having a good old time. They're living,
right,
living
right.
life, and they
and
don't feel your anger.
You make a great point, and I can only draw from my experience, but even in my situation today, I've been feeling guilty for the last, and I'm finally letting it go, David. It was a step, slow process for me, but I'm so thankful to God that I'm able to say that I'm not feeling guilty any longer, right? I don't have that unforgiveness because I changed the course of my life because I decided to get on my bike one evening when I knew I shouldn't have. Even the guilt even beforehand for even purchasing the motorcycle. And I've been holding on to that guilt because I knew that not only did my accident affect me, but it affected everybody around me.
And so holding on to that kind of guilt was of course very difficult, and I didn't like feeling that way. And I think a lot of people who've experienced a tragedy or because of a certain situation, they've affected the lives of other people. They have a hard time holding, letting that go. And I'm only speaking from my own experience because of my situation. The accident was my fault, and I had no one else to blame but me. And it took a very long time, and I know a lot of people out there who've gone through accidents and have changed the course of their lives or became disabled or caused harm to other people that have become disabled or, you know, or even dead, that they hold on to those things, and they have an extremely hard time to let it go. And it varies from person to person. And the way I found strength, again, was is learning to forgive myself and learning that to have faith. And I know a lot of people have different beliefs. I believe in God very strongly, and I have learned that he forgives. And if he forgives, then I need to forgive as well. And the first step in order for me to pardon people around me that do something wrong to me is also being able to pardon myself. And that's how I learned. But I completely agree with you that people do need to let go of guilt. They need to own up to it. They need to realize that what they've done was wrong, and then of course they know it. But also just to let it go, because it's poison, like you mentioned. It's poison in their life.
Yes, and it's especially bad if, you know, there's people out there who just have perfect memories. They remember everything, like an elephant. They never forget. And they're the ones who say, well, I'll forgive, but I will forget.
I won't forget.
Ever. Yep. You know, but they are the ones who are always going to have a problem, because, you know, like the Bible says, you know, if you don't forgive, then he's not going to forgive us. The next thing is loneliness. You know, it's possible for people to be alone and not be lonely. And it's possible for people to be surrounded by people and to be lonely. So that's where faith comes in. I have a great faith. This tragedy of my wife's stroke, you know, it was like I had a stroke too, because we're all in this same boat together, you know, and her problems affect my problems. You know, we're kind of like one flesh. So it's something that you have to deal with, because loneliness is something that you should never feel if you have a belief in God and he's made himself real to you. And I don't mean a belief in religion. There's people who are killing each other out there over religion. You know, I have relationship. I actually talk to my God the same way I'm talking to you. And believe it or not, he talks back.
Yes.
And there's a dialogue. It's not a monologue. And I pray, and, you know, he doesn't always say yes. Sometimes he says no. Sometimes he says wait. He says wait an awful lot.
Right.
But anyway, the goal of the grief process is acceptance. So wherever you are in this grief, if you're feeling denial and you're bargaining, et cetera, and actually I skipped over the most important one. It's depression. Because after you realize that you have no control over all of this, a lot of people just say, well, what's the use? You know, what's the use of getting out of bed in the morning? What's the use of even getting dressed? There's some people out there who have been in their pajamas for weeks who haven't gotten out of bed, and they don't see a purpose in life.
Right.
And if it wasn't for their job, they'd probably be dead by now, because their job gives them an excuse to get up in the morning, gives them an excuse to wash their face, get dressed, and leave the house. And that's why if you have a serious problem with depression, because sometimes it's a chemical imbalance in the brain, and you just need to be on an antidepressant. And there's nothing wrong with antidepressants if that's what your doctor believes you should have. You know, it's not a drug like marijuana or you know, Vicodin. It's just something that is fixing the chemical imbalance that occurred in your brain as a result of some trauma or some tragedy or a stroke or whatever, and it just restores it to normal. You don't really feel different, except you feel normal again. And they prescribed that for my wife, and ever since, she has been very nice to be around, because when her prescription runs out and we're a little late filling it, things just start bothering her, and she gets a little edgy, and she has, you know, not much patience. And I, the first question I'll ask is, "Your Zoloft overdue?" So I would highly encourage, because most suicides come from depression. Our doctor told us that most stroke victims, once they realize, a lot of spouses, not all of them, fortunately, but a